Chapter 1. The stone tower loomed over us like a storm cloud while the gatekeeper's green eyes sparkled with amusement. The iron fence wrapped around the tower and continued down the beach to disappear into the ocean behind it, but the deep blue water hid the rest of the city of Pullis, and we looked out across the sea as the sun began its descent toward the horizon. My hands were clenched at my sides as I tried to figure out how to solve the dilemma at hand. We needed to get into the city and investigate the information we found in Cairo's letters before we'd left Atheson. Someone who went by N had claimed the Green Glass Sect was opening up rifts in various cities, including Pullis. We'd already found the one near Imunving, and the destruction it left behind was horrifying. Plus, Cairo was supposed to meet up with someone they called the Fisherman, so we had to figure out who that was, too. Any sect member hiding out inside a city was dangerous, but we couldn't do any of that from up here on the beach. I looked over to see Princess Aliona, my beautiful fiancé, was chewing on her bottom lip while she twirled her raven forelock around her finger. The rest of her hair was stark white and braided down her back, while her violet eyes stared off into the distance. She'd been raised around magic, and her father was the king of Rama, so she was a highly skilled priestess, and I could see she was trying to come up with a solution, too. Then Naomi seemingly pulled a book out from thin air, but I knew she'd kept it inside her spatial storage. The lizard demihuman was a mage, and she'd been learning a lot of new magic from Aliona and the various books we'd picked up on our journey so far. She tucked a magenta hair behind her ear as she flipped through the pages and absently traced her finger down the scar that slashed from her forehead to her cheek. Though Naomi wasn't the typical hunter or warrior type, the scar was a mark from a battle she'd won against her piece-of-shit brother. She'd made him pay with the spell that had paralyzed him, but I wanted to see his head on a stake for hurting one of my women, even if she wasn't mine back when the injury happened. Now the lady lizard scanned the pages of the journal in her hand, and I figured she was trying to find a spell that would allow us to stay underwater for a while. I smirked when I pictured all of us packed into some kind of magical bubble to dive into the city below. Being from another realm, I was pretty new at all this magic stuff. I was a quick learner, but I didn't know a lot of the history and spells the mages used for our various needs. We'd come to Pullis, a city known for merpeople, as the next stop on our campaign for King Rodion. We did not, however, realize the whole city was underwater. The only place that stood on land was the gatekeeper's tower, and while he wasn't putting up a real fight to keep us out, he'd made it clear the leaders of Pullis were the only ones who could give him permission to let us in, but we had no way to stay underwater for very long, so we had our work cut out for us. I knew my automatic healing ability would allow me to stay underwater for a while, but I wasn't sure how long, and that didn't help me get the rest of my group there. The Dryad sisters, Polina, Trina, and Marina, could probably use their water magic for a while, but it only controlled water movement, so they'd still eventually need oxygen. Ravi, on the other hand, hated water, and for good reason. Back in the desert where we met, the Phoenix and I had protected the ashes of her tribe members who'd started their rebirthing process. The rain came out of nowhere in their desert hideaway, and if the ashes had gotten wet, the Phoenixes wouldn't have been able to be reborn. So Ravi looked fairly uncomfortable as she stared at the ocean in front of us. Meanwhile, Aaliyah and Rebecca seemed to be itching for a fight with the gatekeeper, and the two sexy, muscular beast women openly glared at him. The lioness's gold robes and the bear demihuman's silver robes shimmered together in the waning sunlight, and both of my lovers looked ready to claw his green eyes out of his head. Mariah, on the other hand, sat calmly in the wagon with her hands in her lap while we tried to find a solution. As the spirit of the Sword of Healing, I supposed she could go wherever she wanted without worrying about oxygen, and if all else failed, she could always hop into my spiritual sea and breathe just fine. Laika and Nike watched the gatekeeper, too, but they murmured to each other about how to handle him.
"We could easily take him down,"
the wolf demihuman said under her breath.
"He doesn't even carry a weapon. Pompous merpeople think they can handle anything or anyone barehanded."
Laika's gray furry ears were flat against her head of silvery hair, and her hand sat on the handle of the dagger at her hip. Her broadsword was strapped to her back, though, and I knew it was her weapon of choice. The wolf warrior was the leader of the Blue Tree Guild, and she'd faced many enemies even before we began our journeys together. And she was damn good at kicking ass. Nike, my best friend and fellow noble of the sword, also held tight to the handle of his blade and gazed through the iron fence at the tan-skinned merman. His silver eyes gleamed, and I could practically hear the gears turning in his head as he whispered back.
"I've never fought a merman before," he murmured. "Do they usually use weapons? Perhaps they have magic."
"They'll use whatever is at hand,"
Lyca said, and her lip curled back into a snarl.
"They have no limits as to how they win their conflicts. No moral code. They're basically savages, barbarians."
"While I'm usually all for fighting whoever stands in our way, the king said we can't go in with guns or magic blazing," I cut in quietly. "We have to try to stay civil. I know it's hard, but we have to trust His Eminence."
"Not to mention we still don't have a way to stay underwater,"
Aliona pointed out as she gestured toward Naomi's spellbook.
"I don't think this will be easy to resolve."
"True," I agreed. "Kicking this guy's ass won't matter if we can't go down to Pullis anyway. Can't put the cart before the horse."
"Well, then let's find something,"
Lyca grunted as she crossed her arms over her chest.
"Though I actually understood your earth phrase that time."
"This could take a while,"
the princess replied, and she pulled her own text out from her spatial storage.
"I'm not even sure where to start."
"A vessel,"
Marina suggested.
"Or a mask, perhaps?"
Trina chimed in, and images of an old-school metal diving helmet flitted through my mind as I cringed at the idea.
"Or a transformation spell,"
Polina said, with a shrug before she turned to me.
"Wait, how did you breathe when you went after the Eternal Flame? You were underwater for a while, right?"
"Yeah, like 10 minutes.
Lyca agreed. The Dryad referred to the relic I'd recovered underwater from the Montague Oasis a couple of weeks ago. The artifact had been hidden at the bottom of a lake guarded by water sprites, and I'd had to swim deep under the surface to retrieve it while also resisting its urgent calls to take over my soul. No big deal. I used my healing magic on my lungs, I explained. When they started to burn for air, I sent a wave of healing energy to them."
"Could you do that for all of us?"
Rebecca wondered. I considered the idea, but then I remembered how exhausted I'd been from using my stone magic to build all the walls and aqueducts in Hatra. I'd passed out from the amount of energy I had to use, and Mariah warned me about exerting too much power in a short amount of time. Even now, the sword spirit was looking at me with narrowed eyes as though she knew I was thinking about trying it. Hell, she probably did know as much, since she was in my head. "I don't think I could make it work for very long," I sighed and frowned. "And I wouldn't have any time to recover, so my power would become depleted pretty quickly. Then we'd all be screwed."
"Damn,"
Rebecca pouted.
"Even if you find a way, I can't let you in without permission from the royals," the gatekeeper called out with a sneer. "You can't simply surprise visit a whole city whenever you want."
"We've done it before," I smirked. "Plus, we're royals too. Kind of a big deal, really."
"I don't recognize you," he retorted with a dismissive hand. "You must not be that important."
"Oh, wow," I Owen Wilsoned. "A random guard doesn't know who I am. Why would you?"
"Either way, down there you'd be a visitor," he shot back. "You don't have any royal flags, no announcements, nothing at all to prove you are royalty. For all I know, you're just a bunch of bandits looking to steal from our city. You wouldn't be the first to try it, and I'm sure you won't be the last."
"Who are you to doubt me?" I demanded, and stormed closer to the gate.
"I am Galloway, Keeper of Pullis."
The merman tossed his neon purple hair over his shoulder with a proud jut of his chin.
"No one gets into this city without going through me."
"And I am Lord Evan of Hatra El Shamash," I thundered. "Once I find a way down there, you will not stop me." My voice boomed across the beach and rattled the windows of the stone tower, and Galloway took a step back as his eyes widened in surprise.
"We'll see," he stammered uncertainly, and hovered in the darkened shadow of the doorway.
The merman thought he was a badass, but he hadn't dealt with a dragon yet.
"For now, we should set up camp here," Nike suggested, once I turned back toward the caravan. We obviously aren't going anywhere for a while.
Yes, the horses need to eat and drink.
Lyca agreed.
And us too,
Aaliyah added as she rubbed her growling stomach.
I'm starving. Same,
Rebecca laughed.
I can catch some fish in the ocean for dinner.
Great idea, I approved. We'll get a fire started.
We can help bring the waves to shore with our magic,
Trina volunteered.
Yeah, that way the fishies are easier to catch,
Marina added.
Not that you need our assistance,
Paulina giggled.
We just like to help. Well, let's go catch some fish then,
the bear demi-human laughed. Rebecca and the dryads giggled and made their way toward the beach, while the rest of us started to pull the tents and blankets down from the wagon. Then we began to set up camp near the fence that surrounded the stone tower. Lyca tied the horses to a tree and set out food and water for them as she lovingly stroked their noses, but she kept one eye on Galloway while she brushed out the horses' manes and fed them treats from her pocket.
I'll go get some firewood, Nike decided. I don't think the sand would hold fire very well, and I'm not in the mood for eating raw fish today.
True, I chuckled as he headed toward the trees. Aaliyah began to unroll the animal skins for the walls of the tents, and I plunged the poles into the sand. Then Aliona laid a blanket down on the soft sand as she, Naomi, Mariah, and Ravi plopped down in the middle as they began to pluck more books out from their storages to sift through. Finally, Lyca sauntered away from the horses to hover next to the other women with a watchful eye on Galloway. The wolf warrior didn't seem to be fond of merpeople.
Not a mermaid fan? I asked under my breath.
Not in the slightest,
she replied with a glance in my direction.
The one we met in Kolaruma was all right, but she was working. The others I've met believe they are above such things.
How can a city function if no one works? I wondered.
I'm sure a few of them are willing to work like Lorelei, but most of them are snobs with no manners or regard for others. They would steal the blade from your belt to defend themselves if they wanted to.
Well, now I'm really excited to meet them, I deadpanned and glared at Galloway with her. It was starting to sound like I wasn't going to like the royal family here any more than I'd liked Cairo. He also thought he was above everyone else and had broken one of Rama's most important laws. He'd created his own law that allowed slavery of those he considered less than himself, which was basically anyone who wasn't a bear demi-human. I was still a little annoyed the green glass sect tattoo had killed him before I could. I wouldn't have minded roasting the big bastard in front of his old buddy, Meshesnada.
Ooh, what about this?
Ravi interrupted my thoughts and pointed to a spell in one of the texts. Spirovio? I asked with a raised eyebrow, as I read over her shoulder. It looks like it eliminates the need for oxygen. Sounds pretty legit.
It only works on humans,
Aliona replied without looking up.
Lord Nikolaus would be the only one of us who could use it, and even he isn't truly considered the average human, so there's no guarantee it would work properly on him.
What would it do to a demi-human, I wondered.
I wouldn't want to test it out.
The princess frowned and flipped to another page. Aliona was obviously frustrated with the lack of progress on her search. She'd spent many years in the Cave of 1,000 Sages, and she knew a lot of magic without the help of books. But this situation seemed to be unlike any other she'd encountered. Hell, I wasn't sure any of us had ever needed to spend a day at the bottom of the ocean, so this was all new territory for everyone.
If only we knew a mermaid who could help us,
Ravi murmured. Yeah, they would probably know exactly which spell to use, I agreed. I can't imagine they never have visitors.
If anyone wants to visit them,
Lyca muttered.
How about a halo?
Naomi suggested and held up her spellbook.
We could all wear one easily, and it provides an automatic healing power similar to Lord Evans.
They only work for an hour at a time, two at most,
Aliona answered.
They're sufficient for battle, which is what they're usually used for, but I'm not sure how long we'll need to be down there.
I agree, I nodded. I doubt we'll be able to talk to the royal family and find the rift in less than an hour, especially if they're as generous as Galloway here. The merman's eyes jerked toward me at the mention of his name, but he stayed silent before he turned and stared down the beach. I narrowed my eyes as I tried to figure out what he was looking at, but I couldn't see anything besides sand, water, and some trees.
It's much too risky,
the princess hummed and brought my attention back to our conversation.
We need something that lasts infinitely.
What about At Menace?
Mariah asked.
It's transformative, right?
Yes.
Aliona agreed and looked up from her book as she twisted a lock of her hair around a finger in thought.
I think it works on demi-humans, but only if they already have some sort of water creature on their non-human side.
Can't water demi-humans already breathe underwater? I wondered.
Not always,
Mariah answered.
Just like not all lion demi-humans have retractable claws, and not all bird demi-humans can fly.
Exactly. Demi-humans don't get the exact same traits from their animal side. It's simply a lucky slug.
Lucky slug? I wrinkled my nose. What the hell is that?
You never played slugs?
Laika's gray eyes glinted with amusement.
You mean there's a phrase we know that you don't?
You play with slugs? Ugh. I chuckled and faked a gag. That's gross.
Well, if you pick the lucky one, it has the colored sand stuck to its belly.
Aliona explained with a smile.
Then you win.
So, getting the good traits as a demi-human is equivalent to picking up the prettiest slimy bug? I laughed. I mean, it does make sense.
See, you get it.
Aliona giggled. It's still a fucking weird game, I chuckled. I guess growing up without video games meant coming up with some strange substitutions for entertainment.
Nonetheless, we don't have any water demi-humans anyway.
Ravi frowned and set her book down with a sigh, and then the phoenix flopped onto her back and stared up at the sky.
We're getting nowhere. Then take a break to eat,
Rebecca called out as she and the dryads returned to the campsite. The bear demi-human held up two paws full of fish, and Nike had already returned and started to build the fire.
Make yourselves at home, Galloway chuckled from the tower. You won't be making it to Pulis any time soon.
Can I shut him up yet?
Laika growled, and she put her hand back on the handle of her dagger. Not yet, I replied with a grim smile. He'll get his. Nike cleaned the fish and placed them into a pot over the fire before he sprinkled herbs over the meat and sat back to watch them cook. Within minutes, the aroma of our dinner wafted through the campsite, and my stomach growled in response. Then Aliona and Ravi pulled out fruits from the wagon while the dryads grabbed water canteens. We fixed our plates and sat down in silence, and as I chewed the savory meat, I thought about the likelihood of finding a submarine to take down to Pulis. I bet the royals would agree to meet with us if we showed up in one of those. Aliona, Ravi, Mariah, and Naomi continued to thumb through the spell books while we all ate quietly, and they mentioned a few more ideas for a magical solution, but nothing seemed to stick. We were going to have to think outside the box to get under the ocean.
Stupid land walkers! Galloway laughed suddenly, like he couldn't help himself. You have no idea what you're doing.
How about I enlighten him now?
Laika snarled, but I grabbed her hand before it reached her dagger.
He seems to think we don't know how to handle ourselves, and I'd like to educate him.
You won't hurt me, the merman sneered and took a brave step out of the tower. If you do, the royals will never allow you to see Pulis.
If you keep talking, you'll never see anything again,
the wolf demi-human growled. My inner dragon roared in agreement, but I had to calm them both down. Diplomacy was the key here.
Everyone said the mer people were rude,
Aliona reminded the wolf woman gently. Exactly, I agreed. You said the same thing. They have no respect for anyone else. We just have to be the bigger person right now and keep our cool.
Fine.
Laika's heaving chest slowed as she relaxed and nodded in agreement. Then a blood-curdling scream ripped through the air.